This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. So you're at an unnamed fast food restaurant and you want a small order of fries, except that their smallest size is a medium. This minor abuse of the English language is just enough to set you off. But instead of pitching a fit, you politely order a small and nod your head when the worker translates it into the offensive medium. You are a rebel with the least of causes. If you've ever been this person, take comfort in knowing that you are not alone. In our increasingly impersonal world, people continue to launch their minor protests and take their petty acts of revenge against modernity's small annoyances with tactics honed in the streets, stores, and offices of America. So if you've got a favorite target for your aggravation and a favorite technique of revenge against it, we want to hear from you. What does this rebellion get you? Is it cathartic or an unhealthy fixation? Later in the program, a presidential commission comes down hard on the pre-war failures of the U.S. intelligence community. And Death Valley welcomes an abundance of life this spring, tourist life, that is. But first, the art of petty protest. What's your poison? Is it that pile of junk mail you get every day, or the internet con artists posing as Nigerian princes? Or maybe your poison is being caught in call center hell. What do you do about it? How do you defy, however subtly, the annoyances of modern life? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our first rebel is Mitch Altman. His pet peeve, noisy televisions in public places. His solution? Well, we called him up in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, to tell us about it. Welcome, Mitch.
Hi there.
I take ignoring the televisions wasn't good enough for you. What did you do?
Yeah, I find it really impossible to ignore a TV. So I invented a keychain that has one button, and I call it TV Be Gone, because when you push the button, the TV in front of you turns off.
Hmm. And what brought you to this?
I was in a restaurant many years ago with some friends, and as has happened so many times before, there's a TV on in the corner, and we kept getting distracted by it. We kept getting looking at it, and we were there for each other, not for it, but it kept taking our attention away. So I kept thinking, wouldn't it be cool if anywhere I could go, I could just get rid of that problem?
And you invented this little device.
Yeah.
A pretty simple device. Was it hard to get it together?
Conceptually, it's quite simple. But, you know, getting any kind of device to be a manufacturable product and put into a market is quite the hard work. And I had no idea how hard it would be. And if I didn't have my heart in it so much, it never would have happened.
So it's happened and it's now in the market.
Yeah, and I've sold 40,000 of these things, and I've just been scrambling to keep up with demand. Evidently, a lot of people agree with me.
So give us the scene. You're in an airport, and the television's on, and maybe there's one in one corner and one in another, and no one's watching it, or someone is watching it, but you don't want to watch it. What do you do?
Well, actually, I really don't want to turn off a TV if someone is choosing to watch it. But if a TV is distracting people and people are just sort of like looking at it and then looking away, like happened today in the airport in Amsterdam, there were two TVs, two huge TVs, and no one really wanted to watch it, so I just turned them off.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can imagine, however, that your little device might end up being abused.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you know, whenever you make a tool and put it out there, people can use it for whatever they want. And all I can do is put it out there with an intent. And my intent is to put the message out there that having a TV on or off is a choice. And that message is getting out there. Of course, you know, if you have any kind of tool like a hammer, people can hurt other people with a hammer, but that's not going to be its main use.
Well, let's say you're in a bar and you're looking around and the TV's on and the game's on and you don't see anyone really watching it and you turn it off, and it sounds like, you know, the guy comes out of the bathroom and you might be in the middle of a fight.
You know, I have been in situations where it's turned out that someone really was watching when I turned it off. And since this is just a universal remote control, it's a universal remote control with only one button. And of course, it's the only important button, the off button. But like any remote control, the power button will turn it back on again. So I just turn it back on.
Mm-hmm. Did you say you do have an on button on it?
It's one button, and, you know, like your TV remote control, assuming you have one, most Americans do, the power button will turn it on or off. Same with TV Be Gone. It's got one button. It's a power button. It'll turn TVs on or off. Of course, my intent was to turn them off and leave them off. But like I said, there have been times when people really were choosing to watch a TV, and I don't really want to ruin people's enjoyment, so I do turn it back on for them.
Thank you very much, Mitch Altman.
You're very welcome.
Mitch Altman is the inventor of TV Be Gone, a remote control keychain that turns off television sets. He joined us by phone from Amsterdam. The TV Be Gone may bring peace and quiet to your doctor's waiting room, but some of the thrill of pushing that button has to just be the satisfaction of revenge against the forces of annoyance. To tell us about the science behind that urge, we're joined now by Michael McCullough, a psychologist at the University of Miami in Florida. He comes to us from his office on the campus there. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. Why do humans seek revenge, even petty revenge like this?
Yeah, the urge to seek revenge goes back a very, very long time, and it's very deep in human nature. If you look at all the primate species, one of the things you see about humans is that we're very cooperative. A lot of the accomplishments we've made as a species have come from the fact that we cooperate very well. Now, to get that cooperation to happen over hundreds and thousands of millions of years, natural selection put in us an insistence that cooperators, those around us, adhere to contracts, to social contracts. And when we feel like people are cheating or breaking the rules, our brain really is wired in such a way that we will seek out and find rewarding opportunities to punish those individuals that we feel are breaking social contracts, are breaking faith with the agreements that will help us all to cooperate together.
And historically, or maybe prehistorically speaking, what did that revenge get you in societal terms that made it embedded in our heads?
Well, it was a couple of things. First of all, we have to find some way to punish individuals who would take advantage of sort of the general goodwill, right? So society works really well when everyone decides they're going to sacrifice a little in order to build something bigger than any of us can make on our own. But that's the perfect opportunity for someone to come along and take advantage of all of us good-natured people. So there's a deterrent function there, and that it deters cheaters. Another part of it is that it deters us personally from being harmed, right? Because if you harm me or you break a social contract or a sort of a norm we've established, if I can harm you back, I can convince you that I'm not the type of person you would want to trifle with. But even more importantly than that, revenge does something very important and very public, which is if everybody else around me sees that I will retaliate when you harm me, then perhaps I can deter all of them from thinking I'm the kind of sucker that they can take advantage of later.
Is this still a useful instinct, do you think?
I think it is in limited cases. It is very natural, okay? It's very real. It's a very, very much a deep part of who we are as human beings. And probably in many instances, it does serve useful functions today. I don't think it's as useful as it once was, and it certainly creates a huge amount of human misery. So does it have a proper purpose? Yeah, probably sometimes in human life today. But it certainly is responsible for a lot of mischief as well.
Well, stay with us, Professor McCullough. We want to go to our phones, though. Let's go to Gavin. And Gavin is in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Gavin. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. You have a pet peeve or a strategy for taking revenge for those annoyances?
Yeah, it's basically for telemarketers that call specifically for magazine or newspaper subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is I let they go through their spiel, and then at some point I'll say, no, I'm not interested, and say, well, we just want you to know. And they go through a little more, and at that point I tell them that I am illiterate.
And then what do they say?
They pretty much do what you just did. They either laugh 1 second or kind of hold it back, and then they're speechless. And the only time I ever have had anybody have a comeback for that is one guy who was obviously a good salesman who talked about how good the pictures were in their newspaper.
Oh, really? That's a very persistent salesman.
Yeah, exactly. So, but usually that pretty much ends it, and they say, sorry to waste your time, and they get off, and that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty. It sounds very effective.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
Any other strategies you have?
Yeah, there's another one. If you don't have caller ID, and this is for any telemarketer, you can always say, yeah, I'm interested in whatever product they're trying to, sell to you. And then you hang up. You say, well, I need to go to the other call. I had somebody on the other line. Let me get off on them so I can come back and hear about your product. And then you just hang up, and when the phone rings back, you know it's that person. You just don't answer.
Uh-huh. Very clever. Thanks, Gavin.
Yeah. You're welcome.
How about you, Professor McCullough? You have any strategies or pet peeves? Ways of taking revenge?
I never take revenge. You know that.
You just study revenge. You
That's
don't
right.
take it.
That's right. That's right. Never.
Good for you. You also, I think, study the psychology of forgiveness, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So revenge and forgiveness, interesting subjects. Is forgiveness hardwired as well?
It is, yeah. I mean, that's really the good news about human nature here is we've gotten to where we are as a species in part because we're so cooperative. And we do have this sort of insistence deep within how our brains are put together to chase after people who harm the common good or who harm us personally. But we also have this need to restore valuable relationships and keep them intact.
We're going to have to come back to you as soon as we've taken our break. We're telling stories of revenge. Call us at 800-989-8255 or send us an email, totn@npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington. We're talking about the quixotic retaliation many of us engage in against the small annoyances of modern society. Have you taken to tilting at the windmills of your pet peeve, be it car alarms, telemarketers, or the online Viagra salesman crowding your inbox? Call us with your stories. Our number is 800-989-TALK, 800-989-8255. And let's hope your pet peeve isn't call screeners. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call. Again, 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email at totn@npr.org. Our guest is Michael McCullough, a professor of psychology, specifically the psychology of revenge and forgiveness at the University of Miami in Florida. And Professor McCullough, I cut you off there as you were describing the importance of forgiveness and why it's hardwired into our brains.
Right. Just as we have a need to punish wrongdoers in order to protect ourselves and protect the common good, we really survive on the basis of relationships. And some of these relationships are too good to sort of destroy just because somebody harms us. Relationships with family, friends, very close associates and neighbors. We have to have a way of getting over the fact that we're going to get into squabbles, we're going to have conflicts of interest. And it really does look like not only in human species, but in other non-human primates, you see evidence that when they harm each other, they really are predisposed to try to patch those relationships back together.
Hmm. We have an email here from a listener. Jen in Rochester, New York, shares with us that when my uncle gets a call wanting him to switch long-distance services, he says, I don't have a phone. Usually they say, I'm sorry, and hang up. And let's go to another caller. Actually, before we do that, let's bring in another guest. For another perspective on all this, we turn to Brad Bushman, who's a psychologist at the University of Michigan, who's currently on sabbatical at the Free University in Amsterdam. Everybody's in Amsterdam today, I guess.
That's right.
We've caught him at his home there. Professor Bushman, you've done many studies on the psychological effects of acting out anger.
Right.
What's the diagnosis? Is venting your anger healthy?
No. It's like using gasoline to put out a fire. It just makes things worse.
Oh, no.
So we're
hurting ourselves by taking out this petty revenge?
Not only hurting yourself, but hurting others as well. The research evidence is pretty clear that when people vent their anger, they only become more angry and more aggressive afterwards.
Hmm. And I suppose part of it is that you're really, what you do is you become fixated on this instead of getting it out of your system, really, or just ignoring it.
Right. Yeah, it's like the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Well, how do you become an angry, aggressive person? The answer is the same. Practice, practice, practice. And when people vent, that's exactly what they do. They practice behaving aggressively. They yell, they scream, they hit, they shout, and it just feeds the flame.
Mm-hmm. Now, there used to be, at least for a long time, there was a sort of the conventional wisdom that if you yelled, you got it out.
Yeah, it sounds good in theory, and people like to do it. For example, in our studies, when we have angry people hit a punching bag, about 80% of them say they like to do it, but it doesn't help. It just makes things worse.
Hmm. Let's bring another caller in, Eve in Rochester, New York. Hello, Eve. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I can see why you brought that guest on. It was that type of research that brought me to the conclusion of my pet peeve is people getting irritated in traffic, and they give you dirty looks, and everybody's all hostile, and they feel so superior. So what I do is I don't want the common discourse to deteriorate like that, so I act real nice, and I smile, and I give way and make my car go out of the way so they can have what they need and demonstrate what I want everybody to be doing by, you know, being generous and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I feel superior.
Uh-huh.
So it is kind of a little vindication, but on the other hand, what I get out of it is that instead of rising to the bait of being angry, I make myself relax and not...
Great strategy.
It's a good strategy,
Professor
Bushman?
Research solidly supports that idea. Yeah, it's very good.
But if
keep doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
But if you do that, aren't you sort of fixated on all this bad behavior that's going on around you? Doesn't that...
Well, it only happens now and again, but I think what I'm trying to do is cause everybody to sort of relax and do better. And maybe if once in a while people go, gosh, I didn't have to do that, and maybe they'll get better.
Mm-hmm.
Angry people are highly aroused, so anything you can do to reduce the arousal is great.
So not only are you doing something that's healthy for you, you're doing something that's healthy for them.
Well, I'm a do-gooder. Gotta admit.
Professor McCullough, sounds like Eve is a bit more highly evolved than the rest of us. She is no longer hardwired with revenge.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a very, very tough thing to be able to pull off in the moment. You know, cars have all of the ingredients for really getting us in trouble with aggression. You can't read people's intentions well. You can't really communicate what you mean to do with your actions, and they're dangerous. So we often assume the worst of other drivers. So what she's talking about doing is so helpful if you can get your own emotion under control well enough to do it, because she really is sending positive messages back to other drivers rather than negative ones.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call, Eve. Let's go to another call, one more of these revenge takers, Travis in Columbia, South Carolina. Hello, Travis. You're on the air. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, tell us your pet peeve and what you do about it.
Well, the TV Be Gone was brought up a good point about electronic nuisance, and I was thinking if such a button could be created for those loud car stereos at intersections, that would be a real moneymaker.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
It would, but the pet peeve that I called about today was about mailings and those pre-approved credit enticements that come in the postal mail. I don't think I get less than 6 a day, and what I like to do is send back all of that mail in their prepaid envelopes that they may enjoy, the same kind of flooding effect that I get. But, those marketers are getting more creative to where now you have to include some sort of identifying information to be able to take that kind of revenge. So to do it anonymously seeks the most satisfaction, but that's where I find my enjoyment these days.
So, Professor Bushman, you would advise Travis against this if he wants to keep his health?
Well, it feels good. He probably likes doing it. But, you know, I'm not sure. This situation sounds relatively harmless, but in general, venting anger is not a very effective way to reduce it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Travis.
I'm not alone in that, and I would like to hear what what those marketers have to say about the flood of mail that comes back, because I'm sure there are many people that do this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take that response off the air. You guys have a good day.
Thank you very much, Travis.
I think there's a point to be made here about aggression in response to, or let's just not even call it aggression, but let's sort of behavior that protests what people see as the violations of social contracts.
Mm-hmm.
We use the mail to communicate. Marketers use it not to help us communicate, but to irritate or to take advantage of people.
Right.
And at least that's how we might perceive it. So in part, you might view a response like our caller is talking about as something aggressive, but you can also view it as a protest to a violation of the social contract. Just like telemarketers who call us without our permission are sort of using up a resource that we pay for each month. And so to respond, not necessarily in an aggressive way or even in a way that harms another person, but in a way that clearly logs your protest,
mm-hmm.
I think it's something very, very natural. And my guess would be that it doesn't exert any kind of harmful effect on the doer.
Mm-hmm. Professor McCullough, we know that you've got to go, so we're going to let you go. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Michael McCullough is a professor of psychology at the University of Miami in Florida, and he joined us by phone from his office there. Thanks very much. Professor Bushman, I just wanted to ask you briefly about the TV Be Gone, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you... This device turns off the TV in the waiting room or in the airport if nobody's watching it, or if it's getting in the way of conversation at your table. What do you think of something like that? I mean, is that the kind of thing that it's going to lead to a unhealthy response if you sort of have this very small bit of, I guess, revenge or protest?
Well, as long as other people aren't watching it sounds like a great idea, right? But if other people are watching it, and you turn it off, it may anger them. But, yeah, it sounds like a nice invention.
Mm-hmm. We've got one more email here. It's basically Travis's call with a deeper purpose. Christine writes from Westminster, Colorado. I forward my junk mail to my state senator and representative. I'm trying to convince them to raise the bulk mail postal rate instead of the price of a first-class stamp. Sounds like a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to another caller. And this is Tim in Shoreview, Minnesota, it looks like. Welcome to Talk of the Nation, Tim.
Oh, hi. I was just going to tell you that I like to turn the too good to be true scams back at them by replying to them and telling them that I'm a wealthy businessman, and I drag them out as long as I can, and then I eventually ask them if I can borrow money, and that's usually when they tell me to stop emailing them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
kind of fun.
Yes, very, very clever little idea there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if everybody did it, you know, they'd go crazy and maybe stop doing it as much.
Uh-huh.
Just a thought.
Yep, yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, bye.
Professor Bushman, you say that it's you don't want to try to get mad, it's not healthy for you. How do you avoid doing that? I mean, are there techniques for making sure something doesn't get to you or keeping
something from getting
to
people,
you?
I'm sorry, were you?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I think most people assume you only have two options when you become angry, and that is to stuff the anger inside or to vent it outside. You know, but if you think of a teapot boiling on a stove,
You know, one approach is to siphon off the steam. That's like venting the anger. Another approach is try to contain the liquid, but then the pot will explode. But a third approach is to turn down the heat, and that's a much healthier approach. And angry people are highly aroused, so whatever you can do to reduce the arousal, just letting time pass is effective. So one strategy would be to count to 10. My grandma told me that. Thomas Jefferson said if you're really angry, count to 100. Another strategy would be to distract yourself, try to think about something else, work a crossword puzzle or something. Third strategy would be to try to relax, because that will get the arousal level down. Take deep breaths, listen to calming music. And the final strategy would be to do something incompatible with anger and aggression, such as, you know, pet a puppy or help someone in need or watch a comedy, you know, kiss your lover. Mm-hmm. All those things are incompatible with anger and therefore reduce it.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to another question or another comment from Kyle in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hello, Kyle. You're on the air. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
So you've got a pet peeve and a solution or a subtle bit of revenge?
Yeah, actually, things. I like to turn it into humor. I've got a pretty big imagination, so what I'll do is, like, for instance, I had a girlfriend in the past who was really fond of her hair, and there were things that she did that would aggravate me, so I would just imagine, like, putting Nair in her shampoo, and every time I would see her, like, brush her hair or comb her hair, I would think about that, and I would laugh. I mean, it would just give me that sort of release, imagining doing something that I would really never do. Another thing, like, with when I get callers, the biggest pet peeve is people calling me wanting me to mortgage my home. Well, I live in a house that I'm renting, and they wanted me to mortgage my home, so I tell them, I said, sure, I'm interested. I said, my home's been on the market now for a few years, and I was wondering, do you think that if I get a mortgage on my home, maybe I could just file bankruptcy right after, would I still be able to keep the money?
Mm-hmm.
And usually they just hang up, or they say no, and they try to explain how it works. But I try to find something funny in the situation and try to laugh, because sometimes that's all you can do. And for me, laughter is like the biggest release.
What about those strategies, Professor
Bushman?
Yeah, Bushman?
Humor is incompatible with anger and aggression, as long as it doesn't hurt other people. And so I think the caller is absolutely right.
Now, I hope that was your former girlfriend, though, that you were having imagination about. Is that correct, Kyle?
Oh, yes, sir, yeah.
Not your current girlfriend.
Stuff I would never do, but
yeah.
It's fun thinking about these things sometimes, but I'm a do-gooder like the prior caller, so I wouldn't do anything like that. But
keep laughing, Kyle. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Professor, how do you explain the sort of pleasant rush you get when you do take a bit of revenge, like spamming the spammers or you know, whatever else the case may be?
Well, I think it's a natural response. When people get angry, they don't want to take deep breaths. They don't want to count to 10. They don't want to pet a puppy. They want to yell. They want to scream. They want to retaliate. And after they do, they feel good. But you know, just because you feel good doesn't mean it's a healthy behavior. People feel good after taking street drugs and after eating chocolate, but that doesn't make those behaviors healthy. And in fact, I think they reinforce the harmful behaviors. So I think it's the reason they do it is because it feels good.
Mm-hmm. You know, aren't there the instances, though, where you would agree that speaking out or venting or taking some slight bit of revenge might be the right thing to do or might be the healthy thing to do?
Well, being assertive is important, I think, which is different than being aggressive and hurting somebody else. By aggression, I mean intentionally trying to hurt another person. So, yeah, I think, when other people trample on our rights, it's important for us to be assertive and to not let them do that, but we don't have to do that in a hurtful way.
Brad Bushman, thank you very much.
Sure.
Brad Buschman is a professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. He joined us by phone from his home in Amsterdam, where he's currently on sabbatical. When we come back from a short break, we'll look at problems a new presidentially commissioned report found with the nation's intelligence system, and we'll hear about the blossoming of Death Valley's tourist season. I'm John Itzde. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Itzde in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Before we wrap up this discussion of small annoyances, one last example. You know those little subscription cards that fall out of magazines when you open them? A pain in the neck to many of us readers, but also apparently a good business technique. Jim Zuckermandel is the president of and CEO of Zed Marketing Group, a direct marketing company that specializes in insert media, like those pesky subscription cards. He's with us by phone from his office in Edmond, Oklahoma. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm well. As I understand it, though, those subscription cards are known as blow-in cards in the business, that you actually blow them in with a machine.
Well, yes, they can. While the magazine or catalog are actually being manufactured through the bindery, they can be blown in, typically blown in, but they could also be bound in, so they'd be in snug in the book as well.
Mm-hmm. How effective are they, really? I mean, do you really get subscriptions from them?
Well, all I can tell you is like any other advertiser, do you think those publishers would keep doing it if it wasn't working? Yeah, it works. And quite honestly, when it comes to the subscription cards themselves, the more the merrier. It seems like if you've got more than one card in there, but if you've got two or four and they fall out on your lap or on the floor, it's going to demand action.
Mm-hmm.
You either get frustrated, as some people do, and you pick them up and you throw them in the trash, or you're going to pick them up and set them on the edge of the coffee table and say, well, that's a good idea. I think maybe I'll fill that out and respond to it.
Mm-hmm. How about folks who pick them up, pack them up, and send them off without their name on it?
Happens too. But, see, the interesting thing is that's, from a publisher standpoint, that's, although it's not what they really want, but what it does tell them is that they're getting your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone that comes in that way or blacked out, there are people responding.
Well, thanks very much for explaining that little annoyance for us.
You bet.
Jim Zuckermandel is president and CEO of Zed Marketing Group. He joined us by phone from his office in Edmond, Oklahoma. Thanks again.
Thank you.